Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Fourth quarter here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear hotline. Hit us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter line at Mike Golic Jr. and at ChrisCanty99. And Gojo, we got to get to what's next. Per Christine Lisi's update, Kyrie Irving is set to make his season debut against the Indiana Pacers tonight. And what's happening next is brought to you by Body Armor Light Sports Drink. And Gojo, we got to bring in Andre Snelling, ESPN senior writer, to kind of get us up to speed on what's going on with Kyrie as well as the rest of the NBA. And Andre, I got to start with this. What's the Nets' plan with Kyrie Irving, and how are they going to get him integrated back into the team in tonight's matchup against the Pacers?
Yeah, no doubt. First of all, before we even get to the basketball, I'm from Dayton, Ohio, so I got to start out with a hoo-day to Bengals Nation.
I saw the timeline on that, Andre. I was going to ask, man, having a real quarterback now under center for you guys, I see all the Bengals fans around here, God. Jordan Cornette and you walking a little taller, puffing that chest out now.
Man, I got a Bengals shirt on right now. In my whole life, you know, the Bengals have had some good players, but we've never had a quarterback that people that aren't Bengals fans are fans of the way they are Joe Burrow. So,
Dre, you know, as a former Raven, I just want you to enjoy this because it doesn't happen that often.
I feel you. Hey, as a former Raven, you know, y'all D coordinator used to be the assistant coach at my high school, Charlotte Madison. You know, yep, your boy Wink. You know,
he
came from Trotwood. But anyway, to your question, Kyrie Irving. You know, this is one of the most interesting situations I've ever seen in a season full of most interesting situations I've ever seen. He's going to be playing roughly every other game, you know, on average for the rest of the season, unless or until some kind of rule changes as far as COVID participation goes. I think the Nets, you know, Kyrie, when he's around, he's a big impact offensive player. And quiet is kept. The Nets need that this year. You know, you don't think about it because they were the number one offense in the NBA last season. But they've been real average on offense this season. I think they ranked 14th in offensive rating. So they could use a big impact player like Kyrie. The problem is you're not going to be able to depend on him because it's every other game. So, you know, it could play havoc with their rotations. You know, they've got players that you know, will start on some days and be coming off the bench, you know. Hey, as a former Raven, you know. So, I mean, you know, it's going to be a challenging situation for their team, but he does provide some help at a time when everyone is going through all of these COVID absences and the Nets were hit really hard. He will be able to, you know, hopefully inject some energy and some life in the middle of the season, which is, you know, the difficult, the long kind of marathon part of the season. And maybe he can take some pressure off of KD and Harden and help the Nets to get to that top seed like they'd like to have. But if they are the top seed, he's still only going to be able to play in half of the playoff game. So it's just a really interesting dynamic.
Dre, you mentioned all of the difficulties and differences in this season. For you, especially the way, you know, you want to look at the numbers, look at the data that we pull from this to try and evaluate things going forward. Has this been one of the most difficult, if not the most difficult, even in the last three seasons, to try and do that with all the folks in and out of the lineup?
Definitely, by far. It's, I mean, because the whole analytics style of analysis is based on the idea that what you did before will help to predict what you'll do in the future. You know, you're looking for trends. And so many of these players, like, okay, put it like this. Before the season starts, you know, in late summer every year, I project all of the rotation players on all 30 teams. So it's about 300 to 350 players that I project their season stats for. This season, I think last I heard, it's been somewhere between 550 or 600 players have played in the NBA this season. So that means that's like 200 to 250 players that I didn't even conceive of as of the start of the season. And I'm somebody that's looking at every team. So, you know, when you put that together, it's, I don't know if you watch Game of Thrones, Littlefinger used to talk about chaos as a ladder. We're in chaos right now. So as an analyst, it might make it difficult for me to quantitatively predict the way that I normally do. But as someone that watches the game all the time, I have to hope that my instincts are strong enough to take advantage and help people to climb this ladder. Because I still have to, you know, do my prognosticating. I still have to give the people what they want. So we got a Best Bets article out right now for tonight's games, you know, where I'm making some picks. And so, you know, people ain't going to be wanting to hear, oh, it was hard. You know, I still got to come up with that.
Still got to get out here and make this money.
Yeah, exactly.
Talking with ESPN senior writer Andre Snelling's on Canty and Golic Jr. And Dre, I got to ask you this question. Going back to the Brooklyn Nets, big picture, I know that Kyrie Irving's most likely going to be a part-time player the rest of the way. Does this affect what the Brooklyn Nets do in terms of overall seeding in the Eastern Conference? Because conventional wisdom would say you would want to seed as high as possible so you could have as many home games in the postseason as you possibly can. But it kind of works in reverse with the Brooklyn Nets because he's not going to be available to play in those games. So you would want to have more road games than you do home games. I'm just curious as to whether or not that factors into Steve Nash and Sean Marks' overall plan for this team this season.
Yeah, you know, that's the type of calculus that's never been planned for. I can't imagine that if it came down to it that the Nets would really try to lose in order to get the two or three seed instead of the one seed, just so Kyrie could play in game seven. That seems like that would be a little bit too calculated of a thing for an organization to do, to try to go out and lose. But by the same token, I mean, you raise a good point. Like, if you could have him for three games or four, in including a potential game seven, I'm sure the Nets would rather have him. But all of that said, I think they're still going to try to win. Now, they're already not the top seed. You know, as of right now, if the season ended today, I believe they're tied for second. And the Bucks have also, who they're tied for second with, have also been dealing with a lot of injuries all season. And so, organically, they could end up not having the top seed anyway. Maybe Kyrie might help them win an extra game or two in the games he plays, but there's still going to be enough uncertainty and enough other teams that can play well that they might not end up on top.
Dre, certainly this has kind of overshadowed the other big return to play in the NBA with Klay Thompson getting set to make his debut for the Golden State Warriors here. How different is the integration process getting him back into a lineup that's already been wildly successful so far this season?
Exactly. It's already been wildly successful, but the foundation of that squad is used to him being there. You know, it's the same coach. It's still Steph. It's still Dre. So when Klay comes back, he's coming back to a situation where everyone knows if he's healthy. That's going to be the big question with him, is if he's healthy. But if he's able to come back and be approximately what we're used to seeing from Klay Thompson, then we already know how he fits next to Steph. We already know, you know, how he fits onto that team. What's really going to be interesting to me is, as you pointed out, they are already playing at such a high level. They already have the best record in the NBA. You know, every advanced analytics suggests they're the best team in the NBA right now. And so, unlike Kyrie, who's coming in and trying to maybe jumpstart an offense that's not playing up to par, in Klay's case, he's just coming in to really make life easier for what's already going on there. And I think that he can. You know, like, if we've seen any kind of chinks in the armor for the Warriors this season, it's been in teams that have been able to run out a long, athletic, defensive wing and have him, like, chase around Steph and have it be on a night where Steph is a little bit off anyway. And that's how the Suns were able to beat them. You know, that's how the 76ers were able to beat them when that night he was trying to break the three-point record. And so if you've got Klay there and he's really Klay, then teams won't be able to go all in on Steph like that, because – Klay has a proven track record that he might drop 70 points on a given night, you know? So that gives them another facet. It's not so much a every game huge impact. It's more of a, we've got another weapon in the holster now that, you know, just makes us that much more dangerous.
It really has been incredible to watch that Golden State resurgence and know that this was always waiting in the wings for them as another potent weapon here. Guys, follow him on Twitter at Professor Dr. Z and check him out, ESPN senior writer covering the NBA and getting you all those great betting picks heading into the rest of this season. Dre, we appreciate the time, man. Hoo day. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me, yo.
That is how you jumpstart the new year with Body Armor Light, the low-calorie sports drink hydrating your active lifestyle. As we look at what's next, heading into the debut for two great players in Kyrie Irving and Klay Thompson, albeit in wildly, wildly different circumstances for both of those teams here. We'll look more at that, but coming up next, we'll look at NFL Week 18 and try and figure out what the hell Jerry Jones is talking about heading into their matchup against the Eagles next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Junior on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, we have reached the last game of the regular season. We're used to saying it's week 17 being the last game of the regular season. But now, with the bigger than ever NFL regular season, we're talking about week 18. And the conversation still remains the same as to whether or not teams that have playoff spots clinched should march out their best players out there to play in Week 18, knowing that they're going to be participants in the postseason. And, of course, the front and center of that would be the Dallas Cowboys and the conversation around whether or not they should let some of their star players play.
Yeah, so Mike McCarthy came out and said the Cowboys are going to play their starters Saturday against Philadelphia. He said, quote, "We're going to line up and do what we need to do to win the games. I think playing up there in the weather in Philadelphia will serve us well." And Chris, to me, this becomes a lot easier to understand where it's coming from when you also see Jerry Jones, who went on, I think it was Shannon RJ's show on 105.3 The Fan, and basically said, the Cardinals played us about as well as competing against us as what we do best. He said he thought that they were able to take the sting out of their defense by making them play a more contained style against Kyler Murray. Like, he spent a lot of time lauding the Arizona Cardinals in a way. And you know this, Jerry Jones at one point in time was the guy signing the checks for you. If he's saying that publicly, that seems like a guy that was pretty upset with what he saw on the field with the Dallas Cowboys. And I'm sure that's been echoed that he would like to have a better taste in his mouth heading into the postseason. And so this is probably a part of why we're seeing that.
Yeah, but that's probably, I guess that's the equivalent of not seeing the forest through the trees. I mean, the important thing is that you're healthy going into the postseason. I don't know how much a win against the Philadelphia Eagles is going to do the Dallas Cowboys, especially considering that both teams are going to be in the postseason anyway. Now, I get it. Dallas has the potential to be the 2 seed, but that means they would need both the Arizona Cardinals and the Los Angeles Rams to both lose, and they're playing the Seahawks and the 49ers respectively. Like I said, it's not impossible, but it seems highly unlikely that that would happen. So if you're Dallas, you're pretty much locked into the 4 seed. It makes sense to make sure that Dak Prescott and all the other players that you're going to be relying on get to the game healthy. Did you not learn your lesson by seeing what happened with Michael Gallup? I mean, you saw what happened with him in that situation. Now, granted, that's a game that's important to you that you're trying to win because they were still in contention for the 1 seed. All I'm saying is anything can happen in one game. And for the Cowboys, they don't need this game to be in the playoffs. They don't need this game to compete for a championship. They're going to be playing wild card weekend no matter what. Would you like to have home field through the divisional round? Sure, but that's such a remote possibility. I just don't think the benefit of that outweighs the risk of putting your guys out there in a game that really doesn't mean much for both teams.
No, like Chris, to your point, it's about surveying where we are at the NFL now. We talked about, all right, expanded regular season, meaning more time for injury and attrition. Your team in the Dallas Cowboys has suffered a fair amount of it in a lot of the key spots on your team. Tyron Smith, your left tackle. Lyle Collins, your right tackle. Ezekiel Elliott, Dak Prescott, like all of these core parts of your team. And that's before we get to a defense that didn't have Tank Lawrence for the majority of the year until the back half of the season due to injury. And like you said, the risk reward, the 2 seed used to get you a bye in that first round. It used to mean something. Now that we have, in addition to that expanded regular season, the expanded playoffs that we started last year, now the 1 seed's the only thing that really matters to that end, Chris. So you combine a team that has been as banged up as the Cowboys have been at the core with a longer regular season and a less prospect of getting that first round bye. It just doesn't really make a lot of like practical sense anymore.
No, it doesn't. And let's keep this in mind as well, Gojo. You paid Dak Prescott $40 million, not for what he does in the regular season. You paid him because you thought that he was a championship-level quarterback. So wouldn't you want to give yourself the best chance to get a return on that investment? It's not going to happen in Week 18. It's not that there's something that you need to see from Dak in Week 18, because guess what? Dak Prescott's going to be your quarterback for the foreseeable future. So it doesn't really matter in terms of what his production looks like. What matters is that he can actually get to the games that matter, the games that will lead to your team ultimately being where Jerry Jones wants them to be, competing in SoFi Stadium to win a championship. Like that to me is where Jerry Jones and Mike McCarthy seem to be missing it when it comes to their strategy and whether or not they're going to play their starters. For some other teams that have already punched their ticket to the postseason, it does make sense for them to be playing their starters because it drastically affects their seeding. But with the Cowboys, I don't necessarily see that. I don't get that from this situation. To me, this is something about pride. This is a little bit of hubris. And I think that they're flirting with something that could potentially be very dangerous for this team because you run the risk of one of your guys suffering a significant injury that affects their potential performance in the playoff.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about their identity on this show. You wonder if they're chasing ghosts of the first quarter of that season, right? You got the little taste of your offense being explosive again 2 games ago against the Washington football team. But other than that, it really hasn't been that way. This has been a defensive-led football team based off the speed of your rushers up in that front seven and the ability to take the ball away at the best clip in the NFL on the back end of this defense. That is how you've won football games this season. And we see time and time again teams down the stretch. I remember people telling stories about Peyton Manning's team in Denver going into the Super Bowl. They hadn't run the football damn near all year. They had been a Peyton Manning passing offense. And all of a sudden, when they start getting their teeth kicked in by the Seahawks, Peyton wanted to come in and try and change things up at halftime, and they're like, well, no, we haven't done it this way all year. We're not going to reinvent ourselves in this critical moment now. Just the same way the Cowboys aren't going to drastically change who they are offensively as we head into the postseason. You got the core that you do. You have lived by your defense, giving you extra possessions and being timely with that. And at some point, that's going to have to be enough in this situation. Chasing ghosts is what it feels like in this situation for Jerry Jones and Mike McCarthy as we near this prospect to starting to have to make business decisions in week 18 of the NFL season. We got all that going on as we try and prepare for the football portion of things. Coming up next, though, we're also getting ready to hand out hardware in the NFL, which means we got people mad online about the prospect of Aaron Rodgers taking home the MVP. We will tell you one of the regrettable statements that a voter made yesterday after Chris Candy tells you about Man in the Arena.
Well, Gojo, you just talked about chasing ghosts. There are a lot of quarterbacks that are chasing the ghost of Tom Brady and what he's done. So, Man in the Arena, if you want to know about Tom Brady, this is what you need to lock into. Join host Gautam Chopra as he explores what Tom Brady has meant to football and the world in Man in the Arena, a new podcast from ESPN Plus and Religion of Sports. A companion piece to Gautam's ESPN Plus docuseries, this 10-part podcast examines the improbable ripple effects of Brady's career. Things that have forced us to rethink everything we thought we knew about time, hatred, perfection, even fate. The podcast is brought to you by State Farm, Zip Recruiter, and Rocket Mortgage. Listen and follow Man in the Arena now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and stream the docuseries on ESPN+. Plus, you're listening to Canty and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio.
The College Football National Championship, presented by AT&T. The top-ranked Alabama Crimson Tide look to repeat as national champions when they face Kirby Smart's third-ranked Georgia Bulldogs. Coverage begins Monday at 7 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN. This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN+. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Hit us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter line, at Mike Golic Jr., at Chris Canty 99, and we're seeing the tweets roll in, Gojo, from what you put on there before the show even started about the accompaniments on certain meals that really get people going. You had the brioche bun, I had the bacon, but we're seeing a lot of people chime in on the Twitter and have something to say about that.
It was incredible, Chris, because it all started. I saw the brioche bun listed as a menu item that I was going to go with at lunch here at ESPN here. They had some pesto turkey burger. I saw brioche bun, and I said, that sounds like a pretty good time here. We've had a lot of great submissions. I saw Matt Paris offered up vodka sauce and a hot honey drizzle. I feel like if you just have a sort of drizzle of anything, Chris, that's another one, kind of like smothered, a great buzzword that I'm always going to be drawn to.
You know another one that gets strong consideration, and I know Jason Fitz would love this, Nashville hot sauce.
Oh, yeah.
That Nashville, that hot honey, like that just, that it's so good, man, because you got so many different sensations going on right there, so many different flavors. That's another one that's going to make me raise an eyebrow and take a long, hard look at it.
Kelly Schumacher tweeted in, pork belly. It's the Deion Sanders of menu items, and it doesn't even matter what else is on that side of the menu because shut it down. Plus, it's not just awesome as an appetizer. It can also play as an entree. It's so gifted. Who is to say that it wouldn't also be a great dessert? Kelly, I think you're on to something here.
Absolutely. The pork belly. No question.
Akin
to the bacon?
Yeah. Oh, pork belly to me, Chris, is just thick bacon. Like, I don't know how you view it. It's just like, it's bacon that had like the Mario World green mushroom, right? It got a little bit souped up.
Absolutely. Now, if you add a little Peter Luger steak sauce on the side of that just to dip it in, that takes it to a whole nother level. I'm telling you, if you haven't tried it, tap in, my friend.
This one is interesting to me, too, because I saw Will Blackman, friend of the show, former NFL defensive back.
My former teammate, too.
Yes, yeah. I can say, your former teammate with the New York Giants. Chris, he mentioned Brussels sprouts, because he brought up bacon like you did as something you could add to it, and a lot of people add it to Brussels sprouts. I will say this. No one had a better PR team than Brussels sprouts. Because growing up as a kid, I wouldn't touch those things. And now every grown-up dinner I go out to, you look around at the menu and everyone does that awkward thing where we all don't say that we want like cheese balls or meatballs or any of the real attractive stuff. But everyone universally agrees. They're like, oh yeah, we'll do some Brussels sprouts because they throw a little bacon in there. They saute that. It's incredible.
Yeah, but you got to do it the right way, though. Like, my fiance Mel, she does it the right way. So there's a little bit of a balsamic glaze that goes on the Brussels sprouts.
Yes.
And then the bacon that she throws in there, she coats it in some brown sugar, too, before she pops it in the oven. So you got to make sure you got somebody in the kitchen that knows how to do the Brussels sprouts right in order for me to get on board with it. But you're right. Brussels sprouts of late have had a glow up unlike any other vegetable that I can think of.
It's been incredible. So keep those coming on the Dr. Pepper Twitter line at ChrisCaney99 and at Mike Golic Jr. Which ingredient is going to make you look twice every time on the menu? Caney and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We've had a lot of conversation today about the MVP race in the NFL. Aaron Rodgers has seemed to really get out in front of this thing towards the end of the season. We had one AP voter come out and say that he was not voting for Aaron Rodgers as the MVP because, as he put it, he couldn't have the biggest jerk in the league winning the MVP award here. And as we expect through the course of this season, we've heard a lot from Aaron Rodgers. He had some strong words for the person who came out and said that this was their reason for not voting for Rodgers. Now, Hub Arkish was the name of the reporter who did this, and he went on to say, quote, I made a big mistake last night. I think he's clearly seen through the backlash, Chris, that this wasn't the way. And it's a terrible way to go about voting for this. I have to remind people, he is only one voice in a pool of 50 that has said this. So I don't want to make it out to be some pervasive problem. But Chris, what it did was gave Aaron Rodgers free rein to go ahead and make this about something that it's not. Because Aaron Rodgers wants to, again, bring this back to the vaccine because that's been the conversation with him. Not about the fact that he misled people. Not about the fact that this came off a summer where he was away and constantly made Green Bay Packers fans wonder if they were going to have their quarterback here. Like, there have been plenty of instances, disagreeable things about the way Aaron Rodgers has handled business that don't have to do with his vaccination status at the core of this, but he was given free rein by someone who spoke in my way in a way that I find disagreeable. I think the line of thinking for denying him the MVP, the way that Arkish brought up in that, to me, is idiotic.
Yeah, I hate that Hub Arkish cracked the door open for Aaron Rodgers to somehow play the victim with the narrative that he's trying to spin. I just don't like being in position where I have to defend where Aaron Rodgers is at. I just don't like doing it. But I will say this. When it comes to the criticism about how Aaron Rodgers handled the offseason, when it comes to what happened with Aaron Rodgers in COVID, Hub Arkish would have more of a leg to stand on if we could point to a couple of those losses in there, the loss to the New Orleans Saints where they got the doors blown off them in week one, or the loss to the Kansas City Chiefs where Jordan Love was forced into action because of COVID with Aaron Rodgers. Like, if those games ultimately played a factor in the Green Bay Packers not being able to grab the one seed in the NFC and Tampa Bay somehow being able to finagle it or somebody else, then maybe Hub Arkish would have more grounds to stand on, because those are things that directly impact the season that the team is having in the playoff standings. But that's not the case. Green Bay has the best record in the National Football League. And Aaron Rodgers is the biggest reason why. So when it comes down to those two things, isolating those two things, I think he's a little bit off base. Again, I hate being in position to defend Aaron Rodgers, but I feel like with Hub's criticism, this might be one of those that he probably wishes he kept in the chamber and just go ahead and cast his ballot and let that be that.
Yep. And you know what? In some ways, I'm glad he did, because it needs to be a reminder, because there are only 50 AP voters on this from the Associated Press. And so these things matter here. And while I disagree with the way Aaron Rodgers has gone about a lot of his business over the course of this season, we've been critical of him on this show, the guy should be the MVP of the league. I firmly believe that. And the notion that the way he's acted off the field would stand in the way of that flies in the face of too many other, Chris, and you know well, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, plenty of award winners that have done things far worse than what Aaron Rodgers have done that still get to keep the award. So we're not going to start legislating morality into this thing.
No, I don't think we should. Now, here's the thing. I would vote for Tom Brady as the MVP at age 44, seeing what he's doing, leading the league in passing yards, passing touchdowns, and second in QBR behind Aaron Rodgers. Not to mention all of the things that he's had to overcome this season in the way of injuries on both sides of the ball. I would probably go with Tom Brady, but I can understand what people going with Aaron Rodgers. So I don't have a beef if either one of them ends up being the MVP. Rodgers is the odds-on favorite for it, so it's likely going to be him. The one thing I will say, though, we all got to stop acting like other things are not factored into the MVP vote. It's not just about what happens on the field. Intangibles are often factored in, especially with closely contested MVP races. It's not just about the numbers, because if it was just about the numbers, it would make it really easy to figure out who the MVP is going to be every single year. All you got to do is see who leads the league in QBR or who leads the league in passing touchdowns and go ahead and hand them the award. You wouldn't even need MVP voters if that was the case. So other things are always factored into the equation. It's just not the performance on the field, but it's also intangibles. We're just used to it being talked about in a positive way or in an affirmative way. In this instance, Hub Arkish is trying to use it as a negative.
Yep, it has certainly been a different kind of year in that regard for a lot of the reasons that have been a part of the Aaron Rodgers drama. So that is worth noting here. Hell, we've seen it affect Hall of Fame voting. I mean, Terrell Owens was kept out of being a first ballot Hall of Famer because of the way people try and infuse that into the voting process. Not saying I agree with it, but to your point, it has been the reality on a number of these things. Coming up next, though, as we get ready for Kyrie Irving's return to the NBA after refusing to get vaccinated here, seeing the way COVID has affected that league, he's getting ready to come back to the court. We will tell you about another wildly successful professional athlete that just got pulled off the court for the same reason. Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appeared via the Goodyear hotline. We had Christian Winfield, New York Daily News, Nets reporter, come through, give us the latest on what's going on with Kyrie Irving and him set to make his debut against the Indiana Pacers tonight. ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter giving us the latest on what's going on around the NFL ahead of the Week 18 slate. And then Andre Snellings, ESPN senior writer, getting us set with all the news and notes around the NBA. If you missed any of it, go to the Canty and Golic Jr. podcast, download, rate, and subscribe. We greatly appreciate it. But Gojo, we have now reached the portion of our show where it's time for us to go three and out.
Sometimes it's the worst. Sometimes it's the best. Either way, we'll get you straight with everything you need to know. This is Three and Out.
Three and Out is brought to you by Indeed. Hiring this new year, visit Indeed.com/credit. And maybe the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are hiring at wide receiver. If so, they have got a damn near 50-year-old employee that would like to send in his resume here. Terrell Owens, Hall of Fame wide receiver, has thrown his hat in the ring. He said on his podcast Tuesday that he absolutely could replace Antonio Brown and help the Buccaneers through this postseason. He said, quote, "At the end of the day, I know I can do it. When you think about this country, what it's based off of, we are supposed to be a country of second, third, whatever chances. Look at the chances AB had. Who's to say I can't go out there and do it?" Chris, I don't know if it makes sense for them, but I would love to see T.O.'s 48-year-old ass out there catching passes. Why the hell not at this point?
So a 44-year-old throwing passes to a 48-year-old.
He's still in shape, man. I see T.O. out there working.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. I mean, listen, T.O. is ripped up like I was going to use a line, but I think I'm going to refrain from that. I'm going to pull that back. Just like Hub Arkish probably should have pulled back what he was going to say on the radio. I just caught myself mid-sentence. But you know what I'm saying. T.O. is still chiseled. He's still one of those dudes that's in phenomenal shape. T.O. is going to be in phenomenal shape when he's 70 years old. That's just how that dude is cut. But I don't think he can play in the National Football League anymore. T.O. needs to let that go. Talking about second chances with Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown is 15 years younger than you are, bruh. You already been enshrined into the Hall of Fame. I love you. You're a great teammate as far as I was concerned. But nah, bruh. Nah. You don't need to find yourself nowhere near an NFL field unless you're signing autographs as a spectator.
I you know what? He's been clamoring it for it long enough, though. Just let him do it at this point. I want to let him find out here to see if he's still got it. He has made me curious now, and this seems like the perfect crucible for that one to take place. Remarkable restraint by Chris Canty. We're going to keep it moving so we don't get in trouble for nothing. Canty and Golic Jr., 3 and out. How about this? After initially being given a COVID medical exemption, Novak Djokovic has now been denied entry to the Australian Open. He needs to give proven vaccine exemption or take home. There was initial confusion over the visa situation for the top-ranked men's tennis star, but Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison initially said the decision was in the hands of the government of Victoria, where Melbourne is the state capital, and that the officials have given Joker the exception to come to Australia. Australia's Home Affairs Minister later clarified in a statement that would make the final determination would be the Australian Border Force. He later stated, quote, "If that evidence is insufficient, he won't be treated any different to anyone else, and he'll be on the next plane home." Joker's had a whirlwind here, Chris.
Wow, so Australia taking a hard-line approach to Novak Djokovic, almost as hard as the Aussies are taking with you in the Duke's Mayo Bowl. Like, they are drawing some hard lines in the sand right now. This is getting a little bit edgy with Australia here. I mean, this is interesting. See the direction that they're going with this thing. I'm kind of nervous about it. They say there's a lot of things down under that can get after you. Apparently, Australia is taking that to heart.
They are. Australia, a little spicy here, which we should have expected.
Very spicy.
But we have got to get to the breaking news that we missed with Adam Schefter earlier in the show. Per Marcus Spears, Adam Schefter suffered a meniscus tear that will require rest the next 2 weeks before doctors determine if surgery is necessary. Schefter will not be listed on the injury report for this weekend's ESPN shows, but it appears no more grittying. Insider swagoo. Chris, I wish he'd have told us. Adam, get well soon, man.
Yeah, we saw the Titans designate Derrick Henry to return off of IR. Is ESPN going to designate Adam Schefter to return off of IR? I'm just saying, I want to know.
Shout out to Marcus Spears for joining me in the NFL Insider game. Hopefully Adam Schefter can be back on the men soon and get back to doing what he loves, grittying for a national audience. Stick with it here on ESPN Radio. Spain and Fitz is next.
It really doesn't matter.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.